Jovan Buha! Buha!
Yo, yo! I'm Jovan Buha, NBA reporter and analyst for Buha's Block. And welcome to another live show. Today, I'm thrilled to be joined by Raj Chapalu of Silver Screen and Roll, Lakers Detailed, Lakers Lounge, Offside, Lakers Today, everything. He's everywhere. Rising star in the biz. Just got a big shout out from Brian Windhorst a couple of weeks ago. Awesome moment. Glad you're getting your flowers. Raj, how are you doing today, man?
I am doing well. Having fun. Oh, at least as much fun as I can covering my first playoffs. That's been cool to kind of see the environment and just see when the stakes rise, just how different everything else kind of feels from a seriousness level. But yeah, it's been an interesting series for sure. An interesting environment, Jovan. I don't think I've ever felt that much nervous energy in one building. So yeah, it's been fun kind of following the playoffs.
Yeah, so what's your first postseason run been like covering the team?
Yeah, it's been really cool. And I feel like I've gotten like every single experience you can, right? You have the first two games where these two tight, close games, and Crypto and Los Angeles especially get a bad, you know, kind of rep for, you know, the not coming to games late or not wearing the t-shirts and all that kind of stuff. But I thought the crowd understood their assignment, you know, in the first two games. They were extremely loud. LeBron dove on the floor, I believe, in game one. And the building, you know, the roof came off of the building, it felt like. And then you have, like, what happened in Houston where they lose game four. And everyone's like, all right, you come in and hope to take care of business. And then once Houston threw their first real punch, I felt the whole building shift into, uh-oh. Like, and so that's been cool to kind of experience and, you know, just see how different all the media stuff is as well in the playoffs. It's been awesome to experience.
Well, let's now transition into some of the conversation coming out of game five. So
yes,
Lakers lose 99-93. They have lost two straight games and really feels like it's been like 2.5 games where that second half of game three outside of the final 30 seconds all went Houston's way. The Lakers have been in this malaise offensively over the past 10 quarters. They've scored 227 points, which equates to 22.7 points per quarter or 90.8 points per game. The offense has just not looked good. They are turning the ball over. They are missing open threes. They are missing layups, and they just have not had their legs under them. And it feels like the fatigue factor has really caught up with this group. Houston has looked like the fresher team, the younger team, the more athletic team. And I think that war of attrition has started to work against the Lakers. But I know you did your rewatch for game five. Did you do it last night? Were you rewatching it last night?
Yeah, got home from the arena around.
You're a sick individual.
Yeah.
But I respect it.
Yeah, got home around 1 a.m. or 1:30 in the morning, I think, from the arena, and just decided to get through it, you know, last night.
Okay, so I did mine today because I went live until like almost 1:30, and then had to edit and do stuff, and then I didn't go to bed till 4. But I was thinking about the game, just did get to rewatch it. But rewatch it today. Have my notes here. But let's get into it. So what stood out to you upon your rewatch? Did you feel better about the loss? Did you feel worse about the loss? Did you feel about the same? Like, how are you feeling after rewatching it? And what are some of the things that really stood out upon watching on the broadcast versus being there in person?
Yeah, most definitely. It still felt pretty terrible. I thought Houston controlled a lot of that game, Jovan. I mean, I think the Lakers started off well. They had a 7-point lead, I believe, after the first quarter. But then Houston just punched right back. I thought they controlled the tempo, the pace, and really kept the team at an arm's distance the whole time. Their ball pressure has started to really wear on the team, where a guy like Amen Thompson, you talked about being like more fresh, having young legs. He played 46 minutes in game five, I believe, after playing 44 minutes in game four. So Ime Udoka is leveraging those young legs. But that's what stood out to me, where Luke Kennard, now, you know, he's getting a lot of flack for the 1 point, I believe having 1 point in that game. But he kind of did his job in game one and two. I'm not going too hard on him, but he's looks nervous to even dribble around Amen Thompson, right? And that's something that has really stood out to me. Even so, Austin Reeves on the rewatch, I thought he had really nice positions of being in the pick and roll, but their margin for error is so low. Like, they are last in the playoffs in three-point attempts. Last night, even with Austin's return, they took 27 threes, which would still be last in the playoffs for three-point attempts, for any team in the playoffs so far. That's, to me, something where they're just not being able to create open threes. And Houston has scouted the mid-range. They have scouted, who they want to take away from a jump shot perspective. Marcus Smart and Luke Kennard both have returned back to earth, while Marcus Smart is still taking the shots as if he's levitating, right? Some of these threes and the turnovers is him doing a little bit too much shot creation. And then LeBron, only two turnovers last night, but, I believe he had 16 in the two of the games before then, two straight games with eight turnovers plus. That, to me, he's still having trouble getting downhill without putting so much energy where he looks like he's trying to go through a wall, basically. And he tried that in the fourth quarter. The Lakers had a nice run. But yeah, Houston, the main thing that I think I guess stood out is Houston is now getting very comfortable. They're finding their open shots. We doubled Sengun pretty egregiously. I didn't like it live. I liked it a little bit less on the rewatch, to be honest. I thought we doubled from the wrong places. I thought we weren't in sync at all. We allowed Tari Eason to back cut us three or four times. There was an and one on Jackson Hayes that he got their run going. But yeah, this is a Houston team that is gaining confidence, and the Lakers have a lot of fires to put out, in a short amount of time.
I'm reminded of something that JJ said earlier in the series, where he talked about these little fights, and a series is made up of little fights. A playoff game is made up of little fights. And it feels like the Lakers were decidedly winning those fights over the first couple games and through the first half of game one. And it's not just there's an element of shot making and variance. And of course, when you're putting the ball in, that adds to it. And this is a group that I think at times this season has tended to play. Like, I would say it's not a high motor group in nature, right? But when they have played better offensively, I think you've seen harder defensive rotations or better rebounding or just diving on the ground for loose balls. Like, sometimes their offense can fuel the defense and their motor. And I think now they've still been defending at a solid level. Like, I don't think the defense has been an issue. I think most of my concerns coming out of the game five rewatch were all offensive related. And yeah, it feels like they were really intentional in that first quarter. They were, mismatch hunting and targeting the right guys. They were getting into a good flow with their pick and roll and some of the elbow actions. And then all of a sudden that stuff just stopped the rest. Like, and they did some of it, but then it was like, they'd get downhill. Austin missed several shots in the paint at the rim that I think he would like back and will make moving forward. LeBron had some of those, and guys just turning down good looks as well. Like, I thought Rui turned down, there's a couple possessions where he had a 3-point opportunity, decided to wait a beat. The guy closes out, then he puts it on the floor and takes a pull-up jumper, which he makes that shot a lot, but that night he didn't, last night he didn't. And there's a couple times he got deep seal entry passes and they rotate over, and then he decides not to go up with it and like kicks the ball back out. And it's like those little plays, like those are little wins for Houston's defense. So I felt like the margins have really shifted in Houston's favor, despite like LA's done some better things here, where they won the rebounding battle for the first time all series last night. Yeah. They've won the offensive rebounding battle in back-to-back games, but it hasn't, like, it still has felt like Houston is controlling things, despite their largest advantage over the first 2.5 games shifting actually in LA's favor. And I think one thing that really stood out, and they talked about it on the broadcast, is like Houston's shot profile has dramatically changed. In two of the past three games, they have attempted 39 or more threes. And so their 3-point rate is skyrocketing. And I feel like they're playing the math game here a little bit, where LA's been a low volume 3-point shooting team all series. Mm-hmm. And given the pace of this series and how important every possession is, feels like Houston is kind of calculated. If we just jack up 40 threes a game against these guys and they're taking 25, we're going to make enough of them to offset, you know, maybe their like per possession half court offense is like, you know, prettier than ours and maybe even more efficient slightly in terms of like shot quality and shooting percentage, whatever. But we're going to take enough threes here and we're going to win the possession battle with the turnovers. We're going to get enough offensive rebounds to stay afloat offensively. And we're going to win the math game this way. So it does feel like Houston looks, to your point, and I was making this point last night, like far more comfortable, far more confident. And they have really been in control, I would say, for like 8 of the past 10 quarters. Now, in between that, there was a collapse and an overtime win for LA. But like Houston looks much different than they did the first couple games of the series.
They could probably feel like they should be up 3-2, right? If they, if Jabari Smith doesn't turn the ball over, right? If Marcus Smart is not fouled on a three, a couple of things that, you know, you mentioned with, you know, I think the 3-point volume is directly related to Reed Sheppard playing, right? He, and I'm sure that's another part that I'm sure Houston fans have kind of mentioned, like, hey, if this guy doesn't play 11 minutes in game two out of nowhere, just removed from the rotation, maybe this is a completely different series as well. I believe it was game three or four. I'm not remembering which one, but they started, Johan, running this action with Amen Thompson and Reed Sheppard off the ball, kind of screening for each other. And the Lakers were trying to hide Rui Hachimura on Amen Thompson, and they are leveraging his foot speed or lack of it with Reed Sheppard now involved as a screener. And I think this is twofold. On the Lakers' offensive side, we are taking way too long to try to hunt Reed Sheppard involving Rui Hachimura as a screener. He is just not dynamic enough. And Houston is going, if you want to run your offense through Rui, not directly, but indirectly, right? He's the main screener. Even on that last play, LeBron tried to get a screen from Rui. He was guarded by Tari Eason. Reed Sheppard comes for the steal. You can see LeBron and Rui kind of arguing where he should be as a screener. My opinion on this is that is way too much of the Lakers' diet. I feel like you should be hunting Sengun a little bit more. And then on the other end, you talked about the three-point volume. Reed Sheppard is going to pull Jabari Smith. He has someone's in his ear of – there was a play, I think, not last night, but in one of them, Bronny was on Jabari, and he's just like jab step three. He had a couple last night as well where it was just, yeah, there's a defender in front of him, but he's 6'8", right? And he's just like, I can pull right over you, hit big shots with that. And that's something the Lakers are going to have to find some type of answers for. And I think, you know, the three-point margin is just too large. Like that gives you no margin for error. Austin taking 8, I thought, is a big step forward from that. But LeBron is, I believe, 0-for-9 from 3 in the last two games. That's something that's going to have to flip. Houston is egregiously going under his ball screens and kind of leaving him, letting him kind of fire from 3. That's stuff they're going to have to figure out. But yeah, Reed's just shiftiness as a point guard is giving the Lakers issues. Even if he's not scoring, he's kind of creating the blender out of that. And the other end, I feel like we're just hunting him. It's a good place to – that's a good point of entry, but Rui can't be the entry way that you get into that. And that's where – I'd like to attack Reed maybe as an off-ball guy rather than just trying to directly get the switch, because Houston has that scouted and their defense is getting, they're digging their teeth in on that more and more as the series continues.
And I would also say, yeah, I mean, to that point in terms of targeting him, I thought they were doing some smart things in terms of with Austin. When Austin came in, it, like that first quarter was obviously their best quarter of the game and the best they looked. But I thought Austin came in and they started running these little quick screening off ball actions to get Reed Sheppard switched on to Austin, or to get him switched onto the screener. And then you're bringing that guy into the fray and you're trying to get Reed onto Austin in some form or fashion, whether it's him off of the ball or him on the ball and someone else off of the ball, forcing that switch. And like that, I thought was an entry point into the defense, because now it's instead of Austin trying to take Amen Thompson off the dribble or Josh Okogie or Tari Eason, it's Reed Sheppard. Right. But to your point, I think Sengun, like on the rewatch, he to me he's been like sneakily better defensively the last couple of games. Sure. Like he had the early block on Ayton, but like some of his rim protection, and he's a big body and him just being there. And like he got scored on, I mean, he's going to get scored on just because of, I think he doesn't have like the longest wingspan and he's not like the best vertical rim protector, right? But he was in the right spot a lot of times. And I think like his, defensive quarterbacking at times has been underrated in this series. I think that's an area where you look at the first couple of games, his defensive performance to where they're at now. Like some of those, I mean, DA still got a couple lobs and there's going to be breakdowns inevitably in a half court possession. But Sengun, I think, has been a much better at sort of playing that cat and mouse game in the pick and roll and not letting DA or Jackson get behind him for the lobs when he's out there. So I mean, DA, a lot of his stuff was in the pocket or with offensive rebound putbacks. So like I think Sengun, that's also another thing where like they can attack him more. I think with Austin and LeBron off the dribble, we saw LeBron attack him off the dribble several times down the stretch of the fourth quarter. But him actually in the pick and roll, I think they've figured out some things with that where he's been much better than he was the first couple games.
He definitely has. They have him kind of higher too on ball screens a little bit, right? He's not as back. He's not dropped as far back. They'll have him shock as well. But I think he's a guy that at least he starts Houston's rotations, right? If you can get him out of position, and you mentioned kind of Ayton finding some, Ayton had a couple plays, and Ayton's one of those players, it's weird, he's one of the few players that doesn't get foul calls on dunk attempts. It's the funniest thing. I think he had 3 dunk attempts that just were missed dunks last night. But yeah, I think he's starting to find a rhythm, and he's one of the places too you can attack. If Sengun's on the perimeter, Ayton gets a nice roll to the rim, he can attack the offensive rebound. But yeah, again, Houston doesn't have a lot of places you can hunt. Right, it's a, like you look at the other side, they're starting to hunt Luke Kennard a lot. Like every time, they try to hide Luke Kennard on Reed Shepard, and what does Houston do? They just come and set a screen and said, you're going to be involved in this some way. And Houston doesn't really have unathletic players you can hide him on, and Reed is too shifty and too dynamic as a scorer to hide Luke Kennard on. But yeah, Sengun has been better. There's not a lot of Houston's just a really good defensive team. I mean, even without Kevin Durant, they have a lot of good defenders. Their point of attack defense, to me, has been as advertised. They are making LeBron go east-west every time he brings the ball up. And I've mentioned Luke Kennard's kind of scared to dribble the ball up against them. They have completely attacked the Lakers' ball handlers. Now, Austin obviously coming back helps this tremendously. I would expect Austin to start in this next game because I doubt they mess around with that. But yeah, Sengun has improved, but I still think he's an entry point you can go at. It's obviously a guy that LeBron likes to attack off the dribble. He feels like he can attack his top foot and get to the rim on. Austin is a guy that feels like he can get to his jump shot against him. Again, the screening game that the Lakers have is being so impacted by how just hard Houston chases over. They allow no easy screen, no easy pick, and they've kind of really taken the Lakers out of their offense. But yeah, Sengun has definitely had maybe a better defensive series. I still think that's the place you're going to have to attack. 93 points just is not going to do it. And I also think 27 three-point attempts is just not going to do it either. You mentioned kind of the Rui or some of the Lakers passing up shots. And I give Houston credit for that. Their closeouts are fast and athletic. And what an open shot maybe looks like on TV or in person doesn't look like with Tari Eason's, chasing you, or Jabari Smith or Amen Thompson chasing you. And there was one play, I don't think it was last night, but the game before, Luke Kennard got to the mid range. That's a place where he thinks he can rise up, rose up. Tari Eason met him at his apex and he threw it to Jackson Hayes, who wasn't able to catch it. And it was a turnover the other way. Houston has just locked in on defense, and Lakers are going to find some different answers.
And that's another good point, because it felt like in the beginning of the series, like my big question for Houston going into the series in my preview was, can Houston capitalize enough with an advantage? Because that was the biggest thing that stood out to me on film in the regular season, was with the doubles and trapping against KD and Sengun and the shading over against those two guys, Houston was unable to capitalize with the 4-on-3s, 3-on-2s consistently enough. And I think you saw that in the first couple games, where LA was able to sell out against Sengun in game 1, against KD in game 2, and they were able to live with that gamble. Yeah. That has now shifted, though, where Sengun, I mean, his passing last night and the traps they were throwing, or the doubles and the shading over, and he kept hitting the corner shooter, and they kept having these weak side actions where they would really make the Lakers pay for over helping. And his go back and rewatch some of his turnovers in the first couple games, and then look at, like, they still have the boneheaded where he throws it to Amen Thompson. Amen Thompson's not looking, just goes out of bounds. Yeah. Like, that's just part of the Houston DNA. But even with that, in terms of like the half court, I think their half court offense has been much more polished, and they're really making the Lakers work. I think side to side with some of these, you mentioned some of the off ball actions. I feel like they're running these like double pin downs that are forcing the Lakers to really think, and are we going to switch here? If we switch, now they have the advantage or the matchup that they want. Now that guy can go into a DHO or pick and roll or something. So I think Houston has all of a sudden, after looking a bit shaky there from a schematic and strategic perspective the first couple games, they've really turned things up here these last couple games. And I feel like the Lakers are now the ones who have to make some adjustments. So speaking of those adjustments, what's top of mind going into game six? What do you think the Lakers have to address or have to tweak to close this thing out in six and get at least a couple days off going into the next round against OKC?
Yeah, I think it's just one day off, right? I think it's, you go right into OKC on Sunday.
If it goes seven, which would be Sunday, it then is Tuesday automatically. Tuesday is the latest the next round will start. If they win on Friday and then either, I think it's either like the two East series that are still going, both end in six, Detroit, Orlando, Cleveland, Toronto, or they both end in seven, then the Lakers would play on Tuesday. But I think if one of them ends in six, one goes seven, then they play on Sunday. So yeah, I mean, right now the two most likely scenarios are either the Lakers win in six and they play on Sunday, or they win in seven and they play on Tuesday. So to your point, as of right now, it's looking like if the Lakers win this, they're going to have one day off, and it will be a day to travel and go to OKC. Like, there's a chance they could win in Houston and have to play on Sunday in OKC. So you're packing for 2 days or, you know, two trips, and you have one day to prepare and not even get a full practice in. So that's going to be tough going into game one against OKC.
Right. And I'll cross that OKC bridge once it reveals itself, because you still have to.
It's a good problem to have. It's better than the alternative of blowing a 3-0 lead.
Oh, absolutely. What an environment that would be, and what a summer that would be. I think it would change a lot of stuff. And that, you know, we can discuss that at a later time. Just adjustments. Like I mentioned, the minutes that these Houston guys are playing, you're not going to want to match them. But I think getting Ayton's minutes as close to Sengun as possible would be one of my goals. I just don't think Jackson can survive against him. Now, Jackson's had a really tough series. He's had a tough whistle. But Sengun has also realized, I can go through him, and I'm either getting a foul, or I'm scoring, or I'm drawing two. And Sengun has some crazy flails and moves and spins and, you know, some acting jobs mixed into it. But in any case, he's having a lot of effect on Jackson. And you look on the other side, Jovan, Ime has removed Clint Capela from the equation. So you're not getting any minutes against my backup big man. So if you want to play Jackson, he's either going to play against Sengun or play against Jabari Smith at center, or Dorian at center, and we're going to space you out. That's one of the first things I do. I would match it. Now, can Ayton play 40 minutes, play 38 in game five? I think he's going to have to ramp up. It's just, I think that's just the nature of the series. I also would do, I would throw a lot less doubles on Sengun. Some of these are, you know, 18 on the clock. No advantage has yet been created. Sengun is 3-4 dribbles outside of the paint. If he hits a turnaround fadeaway after three physical body blows, I think I kind of live with that. And then I kind of mentioned it earlier. I think, you know, I'm not saying don't go at Reed Sheppard, but got a little bit more of a mix in the offense. I do a lot more kind of high ball screens, let Austin kind of maneuver, get in rhythm that way, rather than trying to. Right when a ball is thrown, the Lakers have been doing this. Marcus Smart has been kind of the culprit of this a lot. But Houston makes it look like you have a lob available. You know what I mean? Like, they will, it looks like there's a lob.
They're great at that.
Yeah. And then once that's in the air,
it's been even entry passes, like even post, you know, like when they're fronting or three quarter fronting the post, they've gotten several steals in this series of just, you think you have the entry pass. And I think Marcus has been the one who's been the most egregious with this. Like his passing has been all over the place.
Yeah. And I think they do this in transition too, where it looks like you have a one-to-one advantage, but, you know, throwing a full court pass to Rui, it just, the risk reward on that is just so low. But yeah, there's some of these turnovers where it's just like, you gotta be smarter with the basketball. And Houston, again, like I mentioned, is really good at kind of forcing you into those. And anytime the ball gets in the paint, and if you dribble, Like, if you try to put the ball down, there are five hands in there, and they are stripping you and going the other way. Ayton's gotten in trouble with this. Jackson has gotten in trouble with this. But, yeah, that's one of the other adjustments I'd make. And I think, you know, Luke Kennard and Marcus Smart have done kind of what they're supposed to, at least in those first few games. But we need a little bit more kind of shot fake, you know, a little bit more. You know, Kennard got killed for this early, which is funny in terms of, hey, he's not shooting enough kind of things. And now you look at it and it's like, hey, was that transition three really necessary? You weren't in rhythm, right? And stuff like that. I think he can kind of be a little bit better. I feel like he can attack the rim a little bit more. He can't really leverage Houston being out of position like Austin can. And yeah, that's another just adjustment. Austin's going to have to play his 40 minutes in this one. He got to the line 13 times. He was 1 for 10 in the second half, which I think you mentioned is not really Austin-like, right? He was 1 for 5 in the paint. Now, Houston does contest. They are athletic. They jump. They make sure those are difficult. But some of those, I think Austin will get to go in another game, another, you know, chance to get in rhythm for him. And LeBron's going to have to hit some open shots. And, like, those are shots that are available to him. I'm in belief that the jumper will arrive with him at some point later in the series. It was with him early. It has left him in the middle. But has a chance to return and kind of have some redemption here as we move on to game six in Houston, which will be an insane environment, a young team that smells old blood. Like, you know, they smell old blood from a little older team. They smell blood and a chance to kind of kick this to a game seven.
I'm with you. I think to your point, I'd like to match up DA as much with Şengün as possible, but also just play him straight up. I think DA has done a pretty good job just playing Şengün straight up. He has had several times where he's scored on him off, out of a post move or just off a drive. But like, you gotta live with something. And I don't think it's going to be at enough of a volume where it's going to be like he's gonna. He did have the game where he dropped 35 or mm-hmm. 33. But I would rather turn him into a high volume scorer than have him be facilitating the way that he was in game five. So I think you just got to live with DA versus him. The one thing I made a note of going into game five, and I think they did this okay a couple times. I'm okay with the blindside doubles. So if he's ever turning his back to a Lakers defender, and particularly when he's in the middle of the floor and he's doing his little herky jerky backing you down, I like the blindside doubles, honestly. Or kind of swipes where similar to what the play, one of the biggest plays of the game where Reed Sheppard picks LeBron, something like coming from the backside. I think Houston's actually pretty good at this against Lakers ball handlers and drivers is coming from the backside and picking them or just ripping the ball away. I think the Lakers could do that a little bit more with Şengün, but it seems like he's figured out even those baseline doubles from the post area. He's gotten better against that. And then if you're just choreographing it or telegraphing it from like one pass away, he's going to hit that. Like even one of the ones I'm talking about with the blind side, Vando tried to get him from behind, and that was the one where he sprayed it out to DFS on the right wing and DFS cashed it. So you got to be careful with that cat and mouse game. I thought they were better with Amen Thompson meeting him at the level and not giving him as much of a runway downhill, turn him a little bit more into a passer. Then offensively, I would like to see more pick and roll with Austin and DA. I thought they got a lot of good stuff out of that. Some Austin and LeBron. I'm with you. I think Austin should start, replace Luke in the starting group. But you got to find something from the bench. Like, I don't know that you could play six guys. And like the other three guys played a combined 25 minutes. This was like JJ back against the wall, showing once again he does not really trust the bench. And I don't inherently disagree with him because I don't think Jackson, Vando, or Jake had a particularly good game. And I wouldn't say any of those guys have had like good series, but it's really tough to play six guys. And especially going into now every other day, you're in a spot where you need at least like a seventh guy that you trust to play 15 or so minutes. And if you don't have that, you're in a bit of a bind.
Right. Really quick on the Şengün point that you were making, on the 33 points, he took 27 shots to get to 33 points, right? And that was 15 for 27 from the field, which is still an efficient night. But if you can make him take that many shots to get to the points, and then the following game, he had 19 in game four, blowout for the Rockets, obviously, but had 13 free throws. I just didn't think a double was warranted. You talked about the blind side. steals, I'm totally with you. The Lakers have been mixing up their defensive coverages all season on all types of teams. They are prepared to kind of mix things up. But some of those, I think the strong side, Yohan doubles, those are the ones where the pass is too easy, right? It is just too easy of a find. Dorian, as bad as he's been shooting, it feels like there was some regression coming at some point. He was not going to shoot like the worst shooter in the league for the entire series, so he hit a couple there. But yeah, some of those just don't make them, you know, as available as they've been for the Lakers. So that's something that I'm going to have to figure out. On the bench side, I think there's going to have to be a component of small ball. You know, I'm not sure. I'm sure JJ is not too, you know, against that idea, but having maybe Vando at center to match up with the Jabari Smith at center, just some lineups with some transition, with some speed. It's too, you know, I thought this series needed to be a rock fight, but it is too much of a half court game. Another thing that I've kind of noticed is that you mentioned the rebounding matchup that the Lakers won. Houston only had 6 offensive rebounds in game 5. I think they have, not that they're not crashing the glass, but it's definitely, there's a point of emphasis to get back a little bit more, right? If you don't have it, you get back and keep the Lakers out of any easy points and keep this a half court game. That's something that also has occurred where they're not crashing as hard, I don't believe, to the glass and kind of giving that up to get back in transition. So those are some of the things I think the Lakers are going to have to find answers for. And LeBron and Austin are going to have to score. Like I don't see points coming from LaRavia. I don't see points. You know, Vando is not going to be able to score. Marcus Smart and Luke Kennard. I just think Houston has really dug their teeth on both of them and kind of taken them out of what they were scoring with. Marcus Smart was picking on Reed before. They've countered that. They don't allow him to get one-on-one post-ups anymore. And Marcus's passing just has not been to the level of playoff level defense, right? Like he just has not been able to find guys in that way. So those are the kind of things I'm looking for in game 6. It's going to be tough. But going into that environment on one day rest, you know, it's going to be against these type of athletes that Amen Thompson just looks like he does not get tired. Again, played 46 minutes and looked fresh at the end of that game. So you know, we'll see how it goes going forward. But those are some of the things that I think they're going to have to clean up.
Would you go with Maxi Kleber potentially instead of Jackson Hayes?
Man, I just don't think you can enter Maxi in this playoff series right now. If you're going to go with one of them, I'd rather stick with Hayes and hope the lob threat become, like, I think Jackson, there's a chance Jackson can still contribute offensively in this series as a lob threat, as a downhill guy, but yeah, I just can't enter Maxi into this series right now. He hasn't played at all. I think he would fight. I think he would get into some tussles and, you know, on the court as he does every time it seems like he plays, he gets into some confrontations on the court, which, you know, I appreciate that, but I just don't think he's at the point right now where you can enter him into a series, especially this situation, right? Do or die. You have 2 chances to win one.
And well, he did play in game 5 last year. JJ showed a proclivity to throwing Maxi in the fire sometimes. I get your point.
Don't think that was
I think it's tough for Jackson because I think he's in a lose-lose situation where he's either not strong enough and just good enough defensively to match up with Şengün. So they've even switched him off Şengün. He's now more of a roamer and they're putting Jake on Şengün or LeBron on Şengün or Rui, depending on the lineup. And then Jackson's more roaming, but then having to close out to shooters, or they're going against a small ball group, which then again, he's in that same role where he has to be matched up on the perimeter defensively. And then offensively, the Rockets are just switching everything against LA's offense. So that's neutralizing, similar to what Minnesota did against him in the first round last year. So it just feels like he's in a tough spot where he's had, I think, a couple decent games overall, like, you know, in the first 3 games of the series, but feels like he's been sort of neutralized these last couple games. And that's basically been the, like, you know, Vando has become, we saw they continue to just leave him wide open from 3. Yeah. And I think he's 1 for 8 on 3s for the series. He gets a nice cut. And then Jabari Smith blocks him at the rim. Jake has been in an extended rut here for the series and is just not really a factor. Had a nice cut and finish through contact last night, but he's not really doing much. So it's like, I think those guys bring a certain level of defense and energy, and you need that, especially if you look at the top 6 and how offensive minded that group is collectively, but it's like they're kind of grasping at straws here in terms of trying to find like playable guys. Cause I think you could argue like those three guys probably for like a contending team right now with how they're playing probably wouldn't be in the rotation, but the Lakers kind of have to play them based on Luka being out, Austin just coming back, and like there's not really being alternatives.
Yeah, and some of these lineups are really phone booth basketball. I mean, you have, and I'm sure JJ is searching, Ryan. The Lakers are in a tough position because what might be a good offensive lineup, right? Like one offensive lineup I would like to see, and people might call me crazy for it, but this is just a, hey, we can't get anything going, let's get our shooters going, would be the three guards, right? You have Austin, Kennard, and Smart next to Rui and LeBron, and this is just pace and space, right? We need some offense quick. Now, can that survive defensively? Like, who knows? But that's the position the Lakers are in right now, right? You can flip that, and lineups that have played are Vando and Hayes playing together with, I believe, Laravia even in some second unit, kind of the skeleton crews.
There's been a lot of those three.
right. And so we're just trying to survive these minutes, right, of, hey, like, can we just get our guys a breather? And, the funny part is, I believe Ayton was a +2, you know, in that game, but they were a -8 when he sat, and just that's where the game is lost, right? And Houston, who had a big lead, and who kind of kept the Lakers at bay, you know, the entire game. But DeAndre Ayton won his minutes, which I think shows you. Houston also, they don't really get seen this way. Like, they don't get seen in the OKC of, hey, like, why are they allowed this contact, but we're not, right? Some of that I see Hayes getting frustrated with. It's like me and Sengun are wrestling on the other end, and then, you know, no call, whatever. And then we come on this end, and it's like I breathed on him, and then there's, you know, like that type of stuff I can see starting to get in. I'm not blaming refs for this, but it's just Houston also, there's a level of physicality they bring where they just have a lot of bodies that, you mentioned it, that bothers a player like Jackson, right? Their wings don't give up an inch in terms of positioning on the court, and Jackson can't body him, and the role threat is not there because Jackson's not getting, he has no, like, there's no way to the rim for him to roll. So that's stuff that I've seen with him, and I just don't think he's playable right now in this series. Maybe later, maybe against OKC, which is a crazy sentence to say, but for right now, I think, I would go with just non-center groups. Still start Ayton and play him what you can and whatever level he can get to, but the non-Ayton groups are just getting torched. They can't score and can't guard and are fouling at such a high rate. It's just not playable.
And feels like the Lakers are kind of back in the same position they were in last season, right? Like if you had Luka right now, I think you'd have 7 playable guys and you'd just be playing the big three, high 30s into low 40s. And then you're getting enough minutes between Ayton, Rui, Marcus, and Luke. But I mean, still not ideal. You'd like to have more than a 7-man rotation in the playoffs, but that I feel like would just kind of be where that's at. Maybe there's you're rotating an 8th spot for, you know, Jake or Jackson or whatever. But yeah, I mean, last year we had a lot of similar conversations of what you don't have the center on the floor. You just have to go small. That's really your only option. And then eventually it just got to Jackson wasn't playable. And like Jackson and DA, you're seeing the difference between the two, right? And DA, I think, has played really well this series. I probably had his best game of the series last night. And there's a bit of a gap there between those two guys. But in the non-Ayton minutes, it's like they kind of have to go small again. JJ's not loving or trusting the bench. And they're very reliant on the starters and small ball, or, you know, might be reliant on small ball. And there's kind of in the similar predicament to last year. And, but like, they don't really have the ideal small ball look either. Whereas at least like when Houston goes small, their version of small is like Jabari, Tardison, and Amen Thompson, and like these 6'7" to 6'9" athletes that can rebound, can switch, can do all these things. That the Lakers version, as you were talking about, is like, I mean, you have some of that with LeBron and Rui, but it's a pretty tiny group there and with some defensive liabilities. So yeah, I mean, they're in a interesting spot, but to your point, like there aren't really great alternatives and they might just have to go more offensive. And it's like, if you could drop 120, it's going to be hard for Houston to match that. So maybe you just went that way.
Yeah. And again, you talked about the margins. They're just not getting enough 3-point attempts. And look, Jack Ayton is as well, but Jackson's at the mercy of his guards, right? In terms of where the ball comes from. And Houston has just done an incredible job, like messing up the rhythm of these pick and rolls or on these screen actions, right? Kennard is not coming off free one bit, right? And just there is a tug on him, like he is getting pulled, and the physicality of the playoffs has kind of gone into this. I think, but this is where I think the hope is that Austin's return kind of pushes those guys into tertiary roles where they can take advantage off the ball, where you can get the blender started. I thought Austin got downhill a good amount. I thought that was, you know, helpful. He had some pocket passes to Ayton, which again, Ayton had some dunks that didn't go in. Thought we had some corner threes. LeBron missed an open corner three that, you know, kind of could have pushed the lead a little bit more. And I think just playing Austin more would help with this. But yeah, there's not a lot of great answers. Houston was a top 10 offense and defense team in the regular season. Now that was with Kevin Durant, but without KD, it feels like there's a freedom that they play with. Not that KD was the one shackling them, but just in terms of their offense, it feels like they have a lot more autonomy through each player. And then just the speed of the game for them has gone up, where a guy like Jabari Smith is playing in his element now, right? This is not a slow style for him. He gets to run up the court with Amen Thompson and kind of attack the rim. And Amen, I think, has done a really good job, not just reading the defense, but now manipulating the Lakers of understanding where the help is coming from, kicking out to guys like Tari Eason, which that's a dangerous part, Jovan, in this series where Amen Thompson is now shooting like 44% on mid-range shots, which, like, they're guarding him like 08 Rondo. It's just like, hey, have that shot all you want. If he's hitting that, to me, Amen Thompson threes are worth 6 points almost, because that's, again, that's a shot that you are funneling and praying.
He's a taser. JJ and the coaching staff call him a taser. Yeah,
right. And so he hit, I believe, two of those, and it's just like you have to walk the other way, but those are still 3 points in a series where points are hard to come by. That stuff, like Tari Eason hitting threes, I think is dangerous to the Lakers game plan. Josh Okogie, I'm not sure if he hit one in that game, but in any case, yeah, their shooters are starting to get. Now, there's a difference between leave a guy open and then they're swing three times and ball finds energy and these guys, you know, are in a rhythm offensively. That's stuff that I think the Lakers can do a better job with. But yeah, this is going to be you're going to have to take this from the Rockets. They don't look like they're lying down going forward.
All right, let's get into the Q&A here. First one from Yu-Gi-Oh! Duel Channel. Thank you for the super chat. To think the Lakers will be punished for winning too well this series. They're allowed to lose this series, but just not in this specific order. How dumb. So what do you make of... I think if the Lakers lose this series, and it's the first team to blow a 3-0 series lead in NBA history, right now teams are 160-0 in these scenarios, including now. It was 159 going to the playoffs, then OKC beat the Suns, and now it's 160. So you got to think about the discourse around the Lakers plus the discourse around LeBron. Yeah. And there's going to be a whole segment of people that start the whole, well, Jordan would have never lost, you know, a 3-0 lead or whatever. And like, it's going to reopen the litigation of the GOAT debate and LeBron's legacy and all these things, even though he's a 41-year-old in year 23. Like, he shouldn't even be as good as he is or putting the Lakers in this position necessarily. I mean, I guess, do you like, where are you at with the, let's just entertain the possibility for a moment that the Lakers do lose this series. Like, what would be your perspective in that hypothetical?
Yeah. You know, I don't get into these type of stuff too deeply, but I think context 100% matters here. And I'm sorry, like, Austin Reeves did come back by game five. You don't have the right to lose this series. You were up 3-0. Yes, was Houston heavily favored before the series started? Absolutely. I think that was also within the understanding that Kevin Durant would be available, right? Gets hurt in the practice. Now, like, I think some people still picked Houston to win, even with KD out and the Lakers missing, obviously, Austin and Luka with LeBron playing. But in any case, Yovan, you go up 3-0. There is something to it. Has never happened before. I mean, those aren't really words you say a ton in the NBA, other than when LeBron's breaking records, but you don't really say that this has not happened before, and it has not, and I think for good reason, because it is extremely rare and difficult, and, you know, to beat a team four straight times after you just lost to them three straight, that is just something that doesn't happen. So does this affect LeBron's legacy? I can't reach that or even get entertained by that. I mean, he's 41 years old. I don't think anything that can happen now taints him, even if this is this disastrous outcome were to come to play. But I think it would 100% be an indictment on the team, and there would be some evaluations that whatever happens next round against OKC, I think would be separate. I think most people can separate the understanding of that team and the talent and whatever without Luka Doncic versus this team, this young Houston team, this young team that didn't have Kevin Durant for, if this series goes six out of the seven games, they didn't have KD. Like, that to me would matter in this, and it would be a big deal if they lost this series. That you don't go up 3-0 and then lose the next four and not have it matter, not be a conversation, not have some deep dive to go into and some reflections to have on the roster and the team and the decision makings that were had. So that's where I'm at with this. Again, hopefully this is something that we don't have to dive into this summer, but if it were to happen, yeah, there would be some real kind of repercussions for it, for sure.
So I'll make a couple of points on here quickly. I mean, one, I think the national discourse would just be out of control, and right. And there would be a field day on every national podcast and TV Absolutely. Show about this. And again, that's where I think it would go off the rails in that sense. But to the spirit of this question, I do think it is kind of dumb that, like, so if the Lakers got blown out in game three and they had the miraculous comeback down the stretch of game four, and we're talking about a 3-1 series, like, you know, going up 2-0, then it's 2-1, then you go up 3-1 and you blow it, you're still on this list of teams that blew a 3-1 lead, which is embarrassing. Okay. And, mm-hmm. and, you know, like, you don't want to be on that list, no. But the it's, you know, the semantics of it, of going up 3-0 versus going up 3-1, right? And technically they were up 3-1 after losing game four. It's like that all of a sudden puts it in this different historical context. But to your point, I agree. Like, teams that, I mean, the reason it's so hard to blow a 3-0 lead is because if you somehow won the first three games, like, right. unless it's injury related and you lose, like if the Lakers didn't have Austin and then they somehow lost LeBron too, and all of a sudden it's just this group without LeBron, Austin and Luka, like, okay, I would understand that, because at some point you just, you know, you don't have enough talent, firepower, whatever. That's like the one way I feel like it's semi-justifiable if a team blows a 3-0 lead. If it happens in this way, like, I do think there's something to this question about how it's like, well, no one, you know, thought they'd be up 3-0 anyway. And, sure. and it's just, if they were up 3-1 versus 3-0, it's still bad, but we look at it in a different light compared to, well, they, you know, to their point, it's almost like they're getting punished for the game three comeback, almost works against them in, you know, if they were to lose the series. But I don't think it's going to happen. Like, I still think the Lakers are winning this.
Something that I've been saying in this series, which has been funny, it feels like both of these teams have been hot potatoing the house money. It's like, now it's your, you know what I mean? Like, now it's your, you have the house money, like, you have no pressure on you. And now Austin Reeves is back. It's like, oh no, the house money's come back to you. Like, they've just been kind of flip-flopping of who has the pressure to win this series. And right now, I think Houston holds the house money. They were the one down 3-0. They're the one without their star and Kevin Durant. Their season should have likely ended by now. The Lakers got one of their stars back. And so, yeah, is the 3-0, 3-1 conversation a little bit, you know, crazy in terms of, yeah, the situationally? For sure. I think there's some credence to that. But I do think, again, just the context of who they're playing, they should not blow a 3-0 lead to this Houston Rockets team, as, you know, as the roster construction is with the Lakers, even taking that into account. You should not lose a 3-0 series lead.
Especially without KD. Like, I think if we knew KD was going to miss as much time as he's missed in this series, my outlook on this series would have been much different than it was going into the series. Like, part of my concern with the Lakers in this series was going up against KD plus all their athletes. Without KD, I mean, we've seen guys grow. We've seen Şengün and Jabari and Reed and Amen all progressively play better, but it's like, at some point, I mean, the Lakers have had the best player in the series, in my opinion, in LeBron, and that should be enough to get them to the finish line. Speaking of LeBron, next one from Richard. Thank you for the super chat. Can LeBron press on the gas again? Felt sluggish. So this has stood out the last couple games in particular, where LeBron might have had his worst game of the season in game four. I think it was in that conversation. Maybe a couple of other games where early in the year when he was just getting his feet under him coming off of an injury and extended absence. You could put some of those games up there. But in terms of like the stakes, and I just thought LeBron looked very tired in game four, bounce back performance in game five, but still, shot under 50%, which for him, you expect 50%+ from LeBron every game. And I thought took a little bit too long to get going in that fourth quarter and then turned on the gas to this point. But like, I thought it was a little bit too late in the game and it had already become a double digit lead. And at that point, like the Lakers just couldn't get anything going offensively. So do you think LeBron can press on the gas one more time? And like, is there any potential concern here that if the Lakers try to empty the clip in game six and they're like, we're playing all five starters, like 40+ minutes, and we're really going for it. If you don't win in that scenario, you're now setting up a really tough game seven situation where you now have 48 hours to like flush that. And somehow for a group that's already tired, find a way to conjure your like final energy reserves. Where are you at with LeBron specifically, but then kind of like macro, like just the group's energy level and fatigue overall?
Yeah, you're in unprecedented territory, right? No one with this much experience and age has ever been this important as like in terms of the hierarchy of shot creator on their team. So I do think there's going to have to be some math, and not that you punt game six, but there's definitely like you're looking at the gas tank and going, I either have 50 miles to go or 500, and I'm not really sure how far I still have to go, and there's no place to stop for gas. Like, this is the tank I have for these next 2 to 3 days. I do think there's some decisions that are going to have to be made. Look, if LeBron can't step on the gas for at least one of these games, the Lakers aren't winning one of these games. I mean, that's just the reality of the situation. A lot of people use fatigue for game four, Jovan, of why he had 8 turnovers. And he had 8 turnovers in game three as well. They just happened to win that game. I want to give credit. I think Tari Eason has just done as bad as his shooting has been through the series, and his mom making sure everyone knows he does other things on the court, on Twitter. But I think like his defensive impact of picking up LeBron full court has wore on him. And, naturally that makes sense. A 41-year-old that he's having bodies lean on him full time. I think even in these type of game six, game sevens, and you saw it in game five, he has to pick his spots of where he can, when he can attack. And I thought he chose the fourth quarter of, all right, like we can make a run right here. I'm just putting my head down, going to the rim. That is taxing. That is tough. That is putting a head through a wall, right? Because the handle is just not creating any separation. Houston's really good, and they've, have found places to really help out the nail. They are living with late contest closeouts on some of their shooters to where they can overhelp on LeBron drives. But and this is why I think the jump shot is very important. Like, that's gonna have to come with him either in six or scary situation in seven. But the jump shot's gonna have to arrive at some point. 0-for-9 from three is, I like that he took six threes, because I just think they need 3-point volume from somewhere. But yeah, some of those open looks are gonna have to go down. And we'll see if he can get to the rim. He had 10 free throws as well in game five. So, at least was getting to the line. I think he split three straight sets of free throws in game five. But he's definitely going to have to, step on the gas here. Whether he does in six or seven, the Lakers are going to need it for a win.
They need a 30-point near triple double from LeBron. I think that's what it's going to take. And as Mamba Army says, it's going to be on LeBron and AR. Like, I think those two need to combine for, if you're talking a closeout game, like 55 to 60 points, and do so around 50% combined. Because LeBron was 9-for-20, Austin was 4-for-16, so they were 13-for-36. That's just not going to cut it. Even though they combined for 47. So yeah, I mean, I would say 55 to 60 points need to be scoring a little bit more than they did in game five, but certainly be more efficient. And if they do that, I think they should be able to win this one. A few more here before we wrap. The Vadeaway asks, can the Lakers figure out the second quarter BS change in rotation? So this has been an issue in four of the five games where the Lakers have had this just blackout stretch in the second quarter where they just forget how to play basketball and run a functional offense, and they just spaz out, turn the ball over left and right. They don't get back in. Like, it's just a mess on both sides of the basketball, but more so on the offensive end. And it's really undermined them. And that, like, the second quarter stretch in game five, I thought was arguably the difference in the game, where all of a sudden, like, Lakers were up late, you know, double digits late in the first quarter. They go into the second quarter up seven. They're still in control first few minutes of the second quarter. And then Houston chips away, regains the lead on a Reed Shepherd three. And then from that point on, they pull ahead. And then LA has one of those spurts late in the second quarter again to give Houston a 9-point lead going into the half. And it's like, that's just, I mean, that was kind of the game. And then Houston came out, you know, went on a little run to start the third, and then they basically kept the Lakers at arm's length for the rest of the game. So, I mean, have you seen anything in terms of trends other than just the wild ball security and decision making from LA, or like what have you seen with some of those struggles?
Yeah, a couple things. We do this, I don't know why, but especially end of second quarters. I know you're talking about starting the second, but even end of the second quarter, going into the half, Lakers go for these home run plays, and that doesn't just include shot attempts, it includes passes, full court passes that have really no chance of getting through, right? These plays that are just really high risk, high reward. So, I've seen a lot of that, especially in the second quarter. And there's this idea, that it's like bench versus bench, right, in the second quarter. And again, I just want to magnify that or key in on that the Rockets aren't playing their bench either. Like, their start, it's bench versus starters is what it is, right? Even these 5-6 minutes, like, not that you can lose, you can lose a game in the second quarter, but you talk about the double digit lead, they went up 11, and then again those Hayes, Vando, Laravia minutes, it's just right away Hayes gives up an and one to Tari Eason, leads cut down to seven. They get a miss on one end, Jabari Smith comes down, hits a three, I forgot over who he hits it over, and then like right away it's a 3-point game. All that control, that start, Austin has 8 points, I believe, in the first quarter. All the energy in the building zapped because of those 3 minutes right there, and the game is taken. That's the stuff where, again, JJ's in an impossible position. It's tough to bench a player that's been in the rotation the whole year. I understand that. Like, it's a really tough place to be in. But, those minutes are killing them. Like I mentioned, they were +2 in Ayton's minutes, -8 in the minutes he sat. In a game where Rockets held them around that 8-point margin the whole night, that was kind of, to me, a lot of the difference. But that's what I've kind of seen in the second quarter. Some ball control, again, Marcus Smart's turnovers, I thought, contributed to this. I think there was a unit where Austin was running it, and there was some, his offense wasn't really finding the rhythm.
Austin had some tough minutes to close the first half, I thought. And that kind of snowballed into the second half performance to some degree.
Yeah,
he got to the free throw line, he had some assists, but he, 1-for-10, what was rough. Yeah. Speaking of Austin here, are you starting Austin next game? I think we kind of hit on this earlier during the game six adjustments, but
yeah,
we saw they started him in the second half. So I think he quote unquote snatched Luke's chain, so to speak, where it's like, I mean, Luke has just been like, I think he has utility as a floor spacer and as a decoy and as a guy that they're going to put an elite defender on. So at least that guy is out of, if Amen Thompson is on Luke, that means he's not on Austin or he's not on Marcus Smart, right? If Josh Okogie is on him, he's not on some of those other guys. So, or Tari Eason or whoever, it is taking one of their better perimeter defenders. Like, they're still deploying a lot of manpower to stopping Luke Kennard. And you see when he drives, they are converging on him and they're paying a lot of attention on him, really don't want him to get off. So there's some utility in that, but Austin is by far among their current options, like the best ball handler and initiator. So I think that's where Austin, like it does make some sense to have it Austin, Marcus, Rui, LeBron, DA. I think that's like the best realistic balance among the top six guys in the rotation. And then we saw like there's times they brought in Luke for Marcus, they brought in Luke for Austin, they brought in Luke for Rui. You have some versatility there to play with the matchups and see what you like. But I would start Austin, but I also think Austin, like regardless of what we think on here, Austin is going to start, I believe, in game six.
He's 100% going to start. You mentioned he started in the third quarter. I was like, he has to start this third quarter. And some people were telling me, no, I bet they go with their regular rotation. I'm like, no, he needs to start. And it didn't lead to a win, but I thought that was at least the correct process. You look at Luke Kennard's shooting numbers. I mean, he took a minimum 12 shots per game in the first three games of this series. Took four shots in 31 minutes in game five. He just, these shot attempts are being removed, and it's not like he's collecting assists either, right? I mean, he had two assists in the last game. It's just they've removed him, and Houston will get out of position defensively. They will reach, they will, you know, kind of go for steals, but Luke's not really in the position to leverage that into free throws, fouls, right? Austin will. If you reach, if you're out of position, Austin will get you. Austin will make sure he gets to the line off that, and that's something I think you need against a kind of, you got to use Houston's physicality and force against them sometimes. You got to battle force with force, and Austin's one of the few guys that will do that, right? A lot of our other guards, Marcus Smart, will try to do that, but sometimes he will do some dribble moves that, you know, the ball flies. He doesn't take the ball with him. Houston takes it to the other end, and so that's stuff that Austin can really help out and, again, move some of these guys to the, to more tertiary roles. So, yeah, I think Austin has to start if you want a chance in game six.
I agree. But Raj, I appreciate your time. I know we said we're going to keep it to an hour, and typically we go far over, but I went over by a few minutes, try to keep it as close to an hour as possible. So appreciate you, appreciate your time during this busy part of the schedule. I will link to your X account. I will link to Offside. I will link to Silver Screen and Roll. Anything else you want me to plug? Lakers Detailed. But anything you want to plug before we get out of here? And any final, you know, closing thoughts before we wrap?
Yeah, I guess it's kind of, you know, it's a double-edged sword. I'm excited if I get to go to my first game seven. That would be an interesting experience for the first playoffs. But I would rather prefer them to just close it out on Friday. So, no, I'm excited. This playoff run has been cool. Again, I feel like I've gotten the full kind of experience of it, of the ups and downs of a series. I thought it was going to be a nice, smooth kind of sweep. But instead, as it is always in with the Lakers, it never goes smoothly. The story is always interesting. And I think it will continue to be interesting as we go into these final two games of the series.
Awesome, man. Well, appreciate you. Appreciate your time. Shout out to the chat. Shout out to the Late Night Gang. For those watching on YouTube, please be sure to hit that subscribe button, turn on channel notifications, and like and comment on this video. For those listening on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or your podcast platform of choice, please be sure to follow, download, and leave a 5-star review. I'll be back tomorrow after Lakers Rockets Game 6. We will either be talking about a Lakers win and them advancing to play OKC, or a Lakers loss and them getting ready for a quick turnaround for game seven. Either way, we will have plenty to talk about, but appreciate you all. Appreciate you, Raj. And I will talk to you all tomorrow.